Now, here are the Monday morning quarterbacks, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Monday morning quarterback session. We're in the new studios, and Mr. Tate's about a quarter of a mile from me here this morning. How you doing down there?
I can still see you.
Well, I am told, and this is a peculiar way to start this program, but I am told that both you and Ed Bond were walking in the cemetery yesterday.
That's exactly right. I got around. I even saw where I'm going to be buried.
Yeah, well, you're lucky they didn't grab you right on the spot. What was going on over there?
Well, they had a cemetery walk, and they had people representing. My wife was representing Mrs. Smith, who was the Smith Music Hall, the lady for whom her husband built the Smith Music Hall way back in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And Mike Kuhn played George Huff at the Huff grave, and Joe Rank played Zupke at the, and actually some of them weren't exactly at the grave sites because they had to make them within reasonable walk for the people that were walking through to hear. And each person was an actor, and playing those parts. There were six of them, or seven of them, weren't there, Ed? Seven, yeah.
Well, I did not get over to it. I'd been reading about it. I heard a lot of good things about it. I heard that those folks, when they were in character, they didn't get out of it.
That's right.
You say, hello, Mike. Hello, Cooney. No answer.
He didn't respond. They were really good. I thought everybody, the reason I said six or seven, President James and his wife were one pair.
Yeah.
And they both spoke, and they both were absolutely in character. And they were dressed in character. And Joe Rank had those high top shoes on that Zupke used to wear, and Cooner had the little top hat that
Joe's so old he just kept his shoes from my head.
Well,
he had those in his closet.
Maybe that's true.
All right, Minnesota 24, Illinois 17. What was your reaction to that game?
Well, my reaction to it was extreme disappointment in Illinois' inability to, in any way, stop the run. I mean, you're giving up over 200 yards every game rushing, and you can't win football games that way. My take was, after looking back at some of the plays and watching replays, Illinois' line got bombed. I mean, they really did. And it wasn't, for me, the game wasn't as close. It was tied in the fourth quarter. I understand that. But the game, Illinois has got to be better defensively against the run, or they're just going to lose every game.
And we did score a touchdown right toward the end
to
make the score a little closer than it actually was, and try the onside kick. There was a lot of conversation about the time management on that last drive where the television commentators were saying, do you have any – one of them said to the other, do you have any idea why Lovey isn't calling timeouts? And the guy said, zero. I have no idea why he isn't calling timeouts.
Well, you had to call timeouts to save those – when you have those 25-second lapses between plays or 30 or 35 seconds, you need to call timeout in that situation because even if you don't have any timeouts at the end, you might have some time if you could recover the onside kick. And when you're passing at the end, each play only takes 6 or 8 seconds, Jim. If you throw incomplete passes or passes that make a first down, that stops the clock, or if you go out of bounds. So you need to give yourself that chance, and Illinois did not handle that particularly well, I didn't think. But nevertheless, I was never in a mode personally of thinking Illinois was going to win the game, were you? I mean, I didn't think they were going to win it. I was happy to see them score that last touchdown, but there wasn't much time left when they scored it.
In other games around the league, Michigan State beat Indiana 17-9. Northwestern won a good one against Iowa. That was 17-10. And Rutgers won the second game in a row.
Yeah, the Rutgers-Purdue game, I thought there were four games that day that were just about as bad offensively as you'll ever see in a single day in Big Ten play. There were four games, whether you're talking about Iowa, Northwestern, where you're talking about Purdue, I mean, and Illinois and Minnesota.
Rutgers and Purdue, right.
Right. I mean, those games were just inept, in my opinion. It shows you how weak those teams are. I think there are a lot of weak teams in the Big Ten by national standards, by t- top. I mean, let's face it, there are some good teams in the Big Ten, but there are some teams that are really mediocre. Of them. And I thought eight of them played each other that day. Well, I'm counting Michigan State. Michigan State and Indiana. Indiana led that game in the fourth quarter, 6-3 and 9-3. And Michigan State didn't score till late to go ahead 10-9. I know they got a last-ditch touchdown to make the score different, but the real score of that game was 10-9, Jim.
And Michigan, by getting trumped by Penn State, 42-13, moves completely out of the top 25.
Oh, yeah. And they're 2-2 in the Big Ten. And you know what Rutgers' record is?
2-2.
So they're tied. Rutgers and Michigan are tied. I
was reading someplace this morning. Somebody said, doesn't Michigan, doesn't Harbaugh have to win a game, a big game sometime in his career up there?
You know, there's going to be people start to question him, don't you think?
Yeah, he's done some weird things, and it was all kind of cute and all that until he started playing games.
Until he started playing Michigan State.
Yeah.
You can't lose to Michigan State in Michigan, right?
Now he's got Ohio State coming up later.
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't look good, does it?
No, it doesn't. What does look good is next week's game between Penn State and Ohio State.
Yeah, that'll be the championship game, I would think, leading up to the playoff when one of those teams will play Wisconsin for the right to go forward, probably into the Final Four. I don't see if Wisconsin beats Michigan, which, you know, I assume they will, although Michigan's going to rise up and beat somebody one of these days. There have been upsets in nationally, Jim. And by the way, have you ever seen a team that looked better than Notre Dame did against Southern Cal? I mean, they were amazing.
They jumped all the way up into the top 10 in the ratings.
They deserve
overall
it.
The top 25 here in a little bit. But let's take a call. We're operating still on what I call a temporary. I don't know how long you can call it a temporary line, Mr. Bond. But I guess until we get our old number back, 351-5667 is the number. And Alan is first up. Hello, Alan.
Well, I guess everything you guys said, I agree with wholeheartedly, but I was coming into work today and I was listening to KMOX and they were talking about Missouri playing Kansas in basketball.
Yes, they did. Game. They played an exhibition game for a charity.
19,000 people showed up.
How many? 19,000?
Said.
And they raised $1.75 million and Kansas won that game 93-87. In case anybody's interested. And Bill Self says, this game didn't have anything to do with us wanting to play Missouri. In other words, this is an exhibition game. It's for charity. That's okay, but I still don't want Missouri. I don't know exactly what the details are behind that. Do you
must be mad at him because he left the Big 12, I guess, a long time ago.
Anyway, we had an exhibition game too, Alan. Did you know that? What, he hung up? Ed hung up.
Well, the Illini didn't do very well in their exhibition game against Indiana State yesterday here. I think it was 79-77 was the unofficial score, and I don't have any information that is official. I only have
what we got beat by two, you mean?
We got beat by 79-77, and I don't know how the substitutions went. I don't know how the teams played other than I heard we played poorly. And I understand that Lucas did not play, which means Illinois was without their point guard, who, you know, had a concussion last week, got hit above the eye in contact with Mark Smith. And the Illini, I understand, hit the boards pretty good and rebounded pretty well, but just didn't pull it off. And I would tell you that this is a team learning a whole new system of basketball, and I would think that they're not going to be very sharp early, Jim, although they play some teams like Southern in the first game that they should be able to beat. But Indiana State came in, and supposedly it was a close game, obviously, and I don't know how the coaches went about it. You know, sometimes you play it's an exhibition, so you're trying to develop guys and see what works.
Yep, probably everybody played some, I would guess.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Sure.
But when he said that 19,000 people showed up to see Kansas and Missouri play, I wonder how they how they got that by the NCAA. It must be if it's an exhibition game for charity, you can sell tickets and invite people in.
That's the only assumption I have. I don't know why this was an exhibition game that was allowed to be seen. There were a couple like this that were allowed to be seen. There were a couple exhibitions. And then all the rest of these games that are being played are secrets. You know, nobody is allowed in. Nobody can watch.
Let's go to Al. Good morning, Al.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I think this game confirms that what I've been saying about these coordinators is just about dead on. I don't know the situations. Fourth and one, and I said we're going to run the ball in the middle of the line. He gets stopped, and what do? We do that. There had been a point to put in Cam Thomas and let him run a bootleg or something like that. And then on third and seven, Lauren, we run the ball in the middle of the line, and it's almost like we were playing for a field goal. I mean, it's just that's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, what do you got to lose? George was 18-3. That's about 77%. And Lovey comes out and says, well, we need more from our quarterback. Well, why don't he say we need more from our coordinators? They showed Garrett McGinn sideline several times, and he looked really confused and really not sure of what he was doing.
I don't think that's fair, but you can say it, but I don't think it's fair to say if somebody looks anyway on the sideline. I don't think he's confused.
Certainly didn't look cool and calm, which an offensive coordinator should at that point. But,
well, I don't think there's any way he can look that's going to please you, Al, no matter what he looks like.
Well,
I mean, I'm not even saying I disagree with you about the team, but, I mean, you come on here every week and complain about the coordinators. I mean, at some point, come up with something different. I mean,
what is there? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I would think there'd be something.
Well, let's run some plays and be creative and get people excited. I mean, it's like watching a high school game, Warren. I mean, we let these teams run up the middle for 300 freaking yards every week, and that coordinator fails to adjust. I mean, at the end of the game, what's he do? We put, okay, at the end of the game where we had to stop him with 22 seconds to go, we put seven or eight guys in the line of scrimmage. Why can't you do that while the game's on the line? That's my point. And for them not to make adjustments is absolutely ridiculous. A sign of good coaches is coaches that make adjustments. You look at Indiana and Purdue's defense, what they've done this year. You know why they're better? They're aggressive. Watch Indiana play. They got a new coordinator, and don't tell me they got four or five star players, Lauren, because they don't. They got two and three, but they're
when you go out on the field and you have 230-pound defensive ends, and who are pass rushers and can't defend the – you have four people in the front line. And if your four people are getting pushed back, it doesn't matter what happens any other place on the game or what your strategy is or anything else. You can't play football. And then you got a whole bunch of reserve linebackers playing. And to me, that's the important thing. I mean, offensively, it doesn't matter what we do until we fix the defense.
I think on offense, hold on, Al. I just wanted to add a little of something to what you were saying. It seems to me that if it isn't working, turning around and handing the ball to the running back and into the line, that maybe the quarterback should roll out every once in a while. Maybe he should throw a screen pass every once in a while. Maybe there should be a little trickery. What do we have to lose here? Let's try to fool them if we can't beat them. Head on.
That's my point, Jim. That's my point. If you remember early in the game when he brought Cam Thomas in, he did run a bootleg and he missed a wide open receiver. Probably been a 20-yard gain. Why didn't he go back to that play? I mean, those are the things, and our tight ends are not being used again. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's just so darn frustrating to watch this. And at the end of the game, I was crazy about using the clock, and I was too. It's like, are you kidding me? I mean, this is football 101, guys. I mean, totally unacceptable. So, anyway, thanks for taking my vent.
Is there
any way we can cancel the Ohio State game?
Better cancel the Wisconsin homecoming first.
Yeah,
I agree.
Maybe we just send them a letter.
Hide the women and children. Hide the women and children, that's for sure. Okay, guys, have a good day.
I appreciate the call. We'll take a quick break here. We're coming right back at 351-5667. We're back on our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here taking your calls at 351-5667. And here are some text messages that just came in. Patience. Athletes are not here yet, and ones we have are not ready yet. We will get there.
Well, I think you have to wait. I mean, you have to be ready to I mean, you have to hold off until, instead of being so critical of things that they can't help. I mean, they can't help themselves. They're not good enough. It's like taking a, it's like taking the freshman team back in the days when freshmen were ineligible and playing them against somebody else's varsity. What do you think is going to happen? You can complain about the failures, but we had a freshman quarterback now finally playing. We've got freshmen all over the place. We've got sophomores that didn't play much last year. We've got three seniors that are really starting. Three seniors, that's out of the fourth-year seniors and the fifth-year seniors. Two classes, Illinois's got three players. These are the 22- and 23-year-olds that are winning games for the good teams.
How many seniors on the roster? It's like seven or eight.
Well, they had nine, but then they had Eckert went down early, and they've had now I should restate that because it looks like Foster is going to be playing at tailback now. You know, in the last couple of weeks, he hadn't been carrying the ball at all, Kendrick Foster. But
that's what this next text is about. It says the handling of a Kendrick Foster is a head-scratcher.
It is that.
Either play him or give him a chance to transfer.
Well, I can't transfer. He's a senior, Jim. Mm-hmm. He's not into any more eligibility left. But this is his final year, and he decided to stick it out here, and I don't know what happened. I did see him drop two kickoffs consecutively in a game earlier, and since that point, he hadn't been playing much until now this last game. Of course, Bonner sustained a concussion in that game. I don't know whether Bonner will be playing this week against Wisconsin. You know that Epstein is already out, so they're down to their number three running back, and that would appear to be Foster.
They should just ask Wisconsin to loan us a couple. Well, they have running backs running every year, don't they?
Yeah, but look who's blocking for them.
Well, I understand, but they have to be pretty skillful themselves.
That's right. Well, you're going to get good people, Jim, when you have a consistent line play over time like that. It just builds up over time, and good running backs want to come there. I don't think that Bonner's a bad. I think Epstein could run at Wisconsin too. You know, if he was there.
And Benny says, I would like Tennessee to hire Coach Frost before Nebraska decides to hire him. Former Nebraska quarterback Scott Frost is a head coach at the, you know, what is this, University of Central Florida.
Yeah.
What is his overall record? I don't know, but they're having a good season, are they not?
Oh, yeah, they're really good, yeah.
Now let's try Alan again. Alan, we're having a little phone trouble, but you're up, buddy. Go ahead.
Okay. How much did you get to hear me? I got to the Tillman part.
Just start wherever you like. Go ahead.
Well, I was talking about the Kansas-Missouri game, and the next station game, there's 19,000 people there.
Right.
And they're trying to get games back together again, and I understand that.
Wait a minute. Self is not going to do that. That's the point. You're probably been cut off before when we talked about that a little bit. But he says this game doesn't have anything to do with us. They wanting to play Missouri, so I don't think they're going to have a series very anytime soon.
Probably because he knows better. But anyway.
Oh, well, why would he win this game? You know, they've got all. They've got all the good players, and Missouri does this year, and they got beat by Kansas already. But you can't tell anything about an exhibition game. Good heavens!
Yeah, I know, but there's only 6 points. I mean, that's pretty equal to me, in my opinion. But anyway, Jeremiah Tillman had 12 points, and I think 6 rebounds, and I think 4 block shots. I thought maybe he might be a little bit overrated, but looks like I might be wrong.
He's a good player.
He had a pretty good game.
There's nothing wrong with Jeremiah Tillman. He's a good player.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the game this year the way it used to be, almost as much as the Big Ten. And I think we'll play with them, but I don't know if we can beat them.
Well, we played with Indiana State yesterday and came within two, and that was an exhibition too, of course.
The what now?
We played against Indiana State here yesterday and came within two. They beat us 79-77 in an exhibition. I don't know any more than that about it, other than Lucas didn't play.
Well, that's not necessarily good. Indiana State's not that good, or hasn't been. So that's not. Of course, we're starting out with a new coach and all that, and they got to get used to how he wants to run things and all that. So I don't know. It's going to take a while.
Hey, appreciate the call, Alan. Sorry for the mix-up there earlier, but keep calling, buddy. We're at 351-5667. Let's take a quick break before the news coming up here at 9:30 this morning with Brian Barnhart. Be back right after this. And welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. You can call us at 351-5667. Jot that down, 351-5667. That's a temporary line, but we will be using that until we get the other line back. And the Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. We go to the phones for Scott. Hello, Scott.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
A side note before my question is how fast times change. I remember sitting next to my fax machines in the morning 20 years ago and waiting for Tate lines to come over the fax machine so I could read about recruiting and so forth. But times have really changed. Question for you. Not that you want to make a living on it, but with the team as young as they are, the football team, what is Lovey's feelings about fifth-year seniors or junior college transfers that he could bring in some defensive tackle size-wise? These guys certainly want to play, so you should be able to get some of the better JC transfers out there. It just seems to me even next year we're not going to be quite ready. And you certainly don't want to use all your scholarships up on JC transfers, but I would think that they could help.
Lauren, he's wondering about JC transfers and bringing them in and on a, not on a regular basis, but on a temporary basis until he gets things fixed.
In football?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any indication that that Lovey thinks that way. They brought in a linebacker this year that he's worked out pretty well, Phillips, till he got hurt. But I think that they're going to rely heavily on this freshman class. There'll be sophomores next year and juniors. I think that that's the direction he's going. And based on the numbers of recruits that he has right now toward the next class, he's definitely going toward the high school ranks.
Was there something else that you would ask Scott other than the JCs?
No, that was it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what your question, but I think that now is pretty much – settled into the high school ranks. And the last time Beckman did the junior college recruiting, it didn't turn out very well. I remember he brought in about a half dozen one year, and they just didn't pan out at all. Although Fagan's still there. He's still a part of that class, but he had 3 years eligibility when he came here.
Teddy Greenstein in the Chicago Tribune has his Big Ten power rankings, and, of course, starting off with he's got Penn State first, Wisconsin second, and Ohio State third, followed by Michigan State, Michigan, Northwestern, Iowa, Indiana's 8, Purdue 9, Maryland 10, Rutgers 11, Minnesota 12, Nebraska 13, and Illinois 14. And behind each of these names of these teams, he has a little one-liner. The one about Illinois is, listen to this, Lovey Smith's 15-year plan is right on schedule.
Well, this is the second year of a six-year contract, and next year, Illinois is paying him about $2 million this year. Next year, it doubles, and then in the following year, he not only gets $4 million, but he also gets a $1 million bonus. So, he's going to make
a lot of retention bonus.
Yes, it is, and then he gets another retention bonus after that later on, a couple of years later. But I guess my point is that. We're going with Lovey regardless. I mean, success or non-success, you don't have much choice. He has to be successful.
The AP Top 25 has Alabama at first, of course, so they're the only one. that got a first place vote, 61 of them. Nobody else even got one first place vote. Penn State is second, Georgia third, TCU now is fourth, and Wisconsin is fifth. All those teams are undefeated. Ohio State is sixth. They lost one. Clemson is seventh. They've lost one. Then Miami is eighth. Notre Dame has moved all the way from 13th up to number nine with that big victory over Southern Cal. Oklahoma is 11. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma is 10. Oklahoma State is 11. Washington, 12. Virginia Tech, 13. NC State is 14, Washington State 15. Michigan State now is number 16. They move from 18. And South Florida is number 17. And yep. University of Central Florida is right behind them. Somebody had asked about how he was doing down there. They're 18, Auburn 19, Stanford 20, USC dropped from 11 down to 21 after their big loss in South Bend. West Virginia is 22, LSU 23, Memphis 24, and Ohio State is 25.
Who?
Iowa State.
Iowa State. Yeah.
Did I say Ohio State?
That's okay.
Iowa State. And Michigan is out of the top 25 now. If you see the others receiving votes, Michigan would be number 27. As far as this week's games are concerned, some of these are kind of peculiar, Lauren. Get your comments if you hear one of these that makes you wonder. We'll start with this one. At Purdue, 6.5 over Nebraska.
Well, I think what the thing that I said before, I think there are a lot of inept teams in the Big Ten. I think Purdue's very average, and yet they've got a coach that has – that you should have seen in a game where they lost to Rutgers 14-12. He calls some of the greatest plays that – I mean, Al would be thrilled if we had Brohm here because he did really call some good plays. They just didn't foul up those plays, but they'd make a nice play, and then they would – have a backfire, you know, and Purdue only scored 12 points in the game. But I think that they're capable of coming out in a game like that against Nebraska. I think Purdue might play pretty well. But they, I don't think they have great talent at all, but I think they have a heck of a recruiting a heck of a coordinator.
Now, Rutgers, after winning two games in a row, has to play at Michigan, and Michigan is going to be a little mad by then, I would think, or at least the fans in the stands are going to be mad. But Michigan is a 23-point favorite in that game. Indiana is a 5.5 over Maryland, the game at Maryland. Wisconsin is 24 over Illinois. What do you think about that?
Well, I think probably they'll beat Illinois more than 24, I would assume.
And a game at Iowa, the Hawkeyes are 9 over Minnesota. And the biggie is at Ohio State. It's Ohio State and Penn State, and the Buckeyes, I guess, playing at home would give them a 7-point edge, according to the odds makers.
Well, I want to go back to the Wisconsin-Illinois. You said it. Everybody said what do you think about when you think of Wisconsin? Strong running backs, right?
Yes.
Great running game. Let me tell you what's just as good. And if you take your time and go back and look at the record, you can Google it. Look at the record of Wisconsin defensively and how many points they give up game after game after game after game. Their defense is terrific.
And the passing's not bad either.
Well, I guess that's why they're in the top group or in the top five. So I'm just saying defensively they are just so sound. They've got those big, strong defensive linemen. Their linebackers are terrific. They don't give you anything. Defensively, They stop you.
Is it true that they don't have a lot of four-star, five-star guys, that they just got guys?
Oh, yeah. I don't think they have a lot of five-stars at all. I mean, Ohio State has more five-stars than the rest of the Big Ten put together.
Mm-hmm.
But they get mostly three and some four-stars, but they get good, solid football players. They've got a system now. Jim, they're not coming out here and trying to play 20 freshmen, okay? They're playing veteran players. You have to work your way up at Wisconsin. That's what you ultimately get. That's what when you, this is what Michigan State, Michigan State had, everybody's going to say, well, they weren't very good last year. Nobody could survive the injuries at Michigan State, and not only injuries, but people leaving for one reason or another. They had all kinds of problems. They lost, I don't know how many, 15 or 20 players last year. Michigan State did. And Jack Ebling explained, we had him on one day, and he ran down all the players, the regulars that Michigan State had lost last year. They were playing with reserves. Now they're back playing with their regulars. And they have a lot of, they have had, I haven't checked this year, but 2 years ago, they had a whole bunch of fifth-year players. It makes a difference.
And a couple of text messages. What happened to Mikey Dudek? Is he hurt again? The answer is he has a knee injury. And
not thought to be serious. I mean, not thought to be the rest of the season. I think he'll be back, but
he's missed one game. But, you know, even the games that he played didn't get the ball very much. I don't know whose fault that is.
Yeah, I don't know.
That could be a combination of a lot of things, of an offensive line and not giving the quarterback enough time to throw. Dudek, I've watched him in a couple of games, and he appeared to be getting separation pretty well, just like he always did, but the ball didn't come to him.
Didn't have Lunt throwing, did he?
No, he didn't. Makes a big difference. How did the football roster get so far out of whack? I agree wholeheartedly that Tim Beckman needed to go, but his last team went to a bowl.
Well,
how'd they get so far out of whack is what this text message
you
is.
Got two, the two top classes have produced 9 players at this point. I mean, a whole bunch of players have left. Just enough. I mean, you get 20 or more players every year. I mean, 18 to 22, 23. You can even take 25. And Illinois took 25 or 26 just last year. But here we have two. You expect those classes to stay with you, and by the time the freshmen are seniors, you expect them to be pretty good, even if they weren't good as freshmen. I mean, 3 or 4 years later, they're pretty good. But we don't have those players. They're all gone. I don't know. I mean, they've for one reason or another, they've left. You had injuries. You had academics. You had people just didn't want to play.
Right. Transfers. 351-5667. Our text line is 351-5357. Here's a question for you. What's the best age to retire? Over the last 2 years, the average retirement age has been 63. The professionals at Busey Wealth Management can help you plan the right time for you. Deciding when to retire depends on your lifestyle preferences, changes in circumstances such as divorce, health considerations, financial readiness. Busey Wealth Management can help determine your optimal strategy. They review a variety of variables. How much you've saved. By working longer, you can maximize your savings. How much you plan to spend. Consider your needs and expenses as well as your retirement goals. And your life expectancy. The average is 84 for males and 86 for females. The experts understand that no two situations are alike. They'll take time to listen and to understand your needs. Years of experience allow unique insight into planning for a range of situations. Rest easy knowing that they will simplify the complexities of planning for retirement. You can also utilize the retirement calculators at Busey.com to get a better idea of how long your retirement savings will last, how much you can spend each month in retirement. The experts at Busey Wealth Management can help identify your objectives, design a game plan to achieve your goals, and implement a program that fits your needs. Visit Busey.com or stop by one of their many convenient locations today for solutions for a lifetime. Once again, we are at 351-5667. Here's a text message. It says, KU in Missouri joined forces to petition the NCAA to allow this exhibition game to raise money for hurricane relief. All revenue from the event went toward that cause. The idea to create the game came from Self's dad. He told his son if he really wanted to raise money for hurricane victims, he should arrange a game with Missouri. Even so, KU was clear from the start that this was a one-time-only event, not the antecedent of renewing the rivalry. By the way, Tillman had 7 fouls and 4 turnovers in 13 minutes.
12 points and 13 fouls? How many
fouls? 7 fouls and 4 turnovers, 13 minutes.
Okay.
Both coaches agreed to increase the foul limit to 7 for the exhibition.
They can do anything they want in exhibition. Mm-hmm. That's why yesterday's game with Indiana State here, you don't know what took place. They could play players on with fouls. They could substitute any way they want to. I mean, and nobody really cared. I shouldn't say they didn't care, but the outcome of the game was not the most important thing when they started.
Just like having a scrimmage.
Yeah.
Let's go to Eric. Good morning, Eric.
Hello, gentlemen. Here comes your broken record.
Okay.
Now let's say you're being back to when you were a youngster. And you used to play a game at recess called kickball. You know, it's sort of, you run the bases, you know, you kick this red ball, and, you know, people feel it was on asphalt. But prior to the game, they choose sides, you know, and you didn't see one guy, the captain, getting all the players, you know, because both guys that were the captains usually pit pretty well, and the players were distributed. Until that happens, there is going to be this whole NCAA business is a joke. That's why the coaching salaries are out of hand, because there's not that much difference from coach to coach, and we don't get to find out because we don't have a distribution of the players.
Absolutely.
Does that take the form of a draft? Does that take the form of a draft out of high school and some kind of formula that I'm not smart enough to figure out? But what it does is not the form that it's taking right now, because it's a mockery. I mean, you got 5-6 years out on a guy like Levy Smith, and seems like nice enough guy. You know, well, we make millionaires, multimillionaires out of coaches. We wear out knees and ankles on players. We give them an education, but the average education, for crying out loud, is overpriced. I mean, the whole thing has just got so out of hand. I can't take it seriously. I don't know what, you know. Both of you, you grew up in the age of this where this was adjunct to the school experience, you know, where you could see different. Where no one dominated all the time. It was different then, and it's just whatever this is now, it's not right.
Well, the distribution. If you watched Penn State play and saw that white out there with 104,000 people absolutely going crazy, all waving at the same time. I mean, it's such a breathtaking thing. If you were a recruit, where would you go? Or would you go to Illinois where people are walking out of the stadium in the third quarter, with 35,000 tickets sold and probably 25 there and then most of them leaving? I mean, there's no way to equalize it that I know of.
Well, there is, but not as it's presently set. I mean, if you take an NFL team and it goes like 16 games a season, say 0-14, worse.
Yeah, of course.
What happens? What happens?
They get the good draft picks. Yeah,
they get some picks, and there's you get some sort of parity, so that the league's not a joke. I mean, same thing in baseball. There's revenue sharing, there's other things, so you can see somebody like Milwaukee give a good roll almost to the end of the season. You see all kinds of other teams surfacing, and it builds the sport because you got fans in other places. You know, it's this can't go on. I mean, because people aren't showing up, you know, and they won't show up. I certainly wouldn't. And, because it's a fixed deal. It's fixed, you know. I hate to use that term. It's been used a lot for other reasons. But there you have it. Thanks for listening, fellas. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate the call.
It's an imbalance situation, and I don't know how you'd balance it.
You don't. When I read the top 25 there were a couple of teams in there that maybe aren't ordinarily in there, but the rest of them are always there.
Yeah.
But his idea of drafting people out of high school is an impossibility. Just think how many players were talking. That's somebody's get that going, that'd be first thing that would happen would be that's we're going right to court with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not the end. I sympathize or empathize with him. The NFL system of getting the high draft picks and all that. If you choose wisely there, you got a chance to build your team. And
absolutely.
Jacksonville has now won a couple of games. They shut out Indianapolis yesterday.
Yeah, they're looking better all the time. And of course, in baseball, you see what Houston's done. You got Houston and the Cubs built from ground up, and look where they are. And, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, Houston was so far down they couldn't see the ground. They were so far under it. But they've made it back. And even the Yankees, I mean, the Yankees have formed a good team. It's kind of a new team.
You know, I like Houston. I thought it would be kind of neat for nostalgia purposes, to have the Dodgers and the Yankees play.
Yeah.
But Houston's got a lot of intriguing players, include that. How tall is that young man? He's about 5'2", isn't he?
Well, they list him at 5'6". I think he's 5'4".
He stands up against Judge or somebody like that who's about 6'6". Let's see. Here is an email. It says, I am sick and tired every week of hearing from Al, from Fisher, pile on the coordinators. It's obvious he wants Lovey and the Illini to fail. Wish you consider watching future Illini games. Illini games, or does he just call in on Mondays and further upset the listeners? Incompetent Thomas set us back 5 years in football and basketball with his firings and hirings. The cupboard was bare from Beckman and Cubitt. We need more freshman classes like this one to better compete. We finally ran out of Zook's recruits. Hope Al finds another entertainment outlet. Well, I for one appreciate his calls, and I hope that he keeps calling. We like two-way here.
What we don't want is apathy. Even if you don't agree with us, right?
And haven't heard anything lately about Gabe Megason's on the Illini football team. Is he injured, or what's his story?
He seems to be moved down the ladder. I mean, they've changed that offensive line. They're starting four freshmen. I mean, starting one redshirt freshman and Kramer and three other freshmen. And, of course, DeLauro now is coming in and playing a lot at tight end in the run situations and got some big blocks in this game and has had some big blocks the last 2 weeks. So he's working out pretty well as a substitute. Actually, he's a sixth offensive lineman. I mean, he comes in as a tight end and blocks. And so that's working out for him. But Megason has just fallen off the...
Well, Megason got banged up a little bit that game, too. He went limping off at one time. I don't know if he... I think he came back in, but...
Oh, on Saturday?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Well, just after one play, you know, you can almost get banged up on any play if you're one of those linemen that keep smacking each other. Let's see. Is it time for Coach Johnson from Centennial to be replaced? They average 40-plus point losses and only 2 wins.
Well, all I know is that Urbana, Central, and Centennial are collectively the worst they've been in history. As a group, as a trio. Really bad teams. And by the way, I got to throw it in for Monticello. Down 24-12 with 3 minutes to go and beat St. Joe Ogden. Knocked them out of the playoffs for the first time. They finished 4-5, did St. Joe. 26 years they'd made it in a row.
I heard at one point in that game, right at the end, the Monticello team got together in a huddle, and they said, let's win one for the tater.
I don't think they know who I am, but I tell you what, they did what Illinois couldn't do. They got the onside kickoff, which they had to get in order to salvage the game at the very end. Now, Illinois scored with 23 seconds to go, so the onside kick probably wouldn't have saved Illinois in that game because they'd already lost too much time. But Monticello
scored in two touchdowns in the final minutes.
Here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to hour number two of our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. Our phone number is 351-5667. 351-5667. You can text us on the Castle Heating and the Cooling text line. That is 351-5357. And Lauren was doing a little scrambling during that break there. I think you found out a little more about the scrimmage yesterday.
Yeah, a little more about the basketball game against Indiana State. Indiana State won the game by 2 points, 79-77. I believe that's accurate. Illinois is pretty sloppy. Mark Smith and Mark Allstork did not shoot the ball well. Ron Black was the best player on the court probably, at least for Illinois. He had a real good game on the boards and evidently scored. I don't know the number of points, but LeRon Black had a really solid game. They did not shoot free throws on common fouls. They just decided they weren't going to shoot them. And so they have their own rules for these exhibitions, and they want to keep it going. But otherwise, it was pretty much of a regulation game. They did shoot free throws on attempted shots when they were fouled in the act of shooting, but not otherwise. And Indiana State, I'm told, shot very well and won the game here.
How about the fouls? Did they say well, about the number of fouls?
I don't know. I didn't ask that. I should have after hearing what they did for Jeremiah Tillman. But no, I don't know about that. But as much information as I've been able to get so far, as I said, this is a secret game. They're not allowed to basically tell us about it or tell us in advance that it's even being played or where it's being played or anything like that. Unless you petition the NCAA and have a charity, okay? Maybe we'll do that next year. And we got a game coming up with Vanderbilt, same thing. I think it's going to be at Vanderbilt, another secret game coming.
Get that investigative reporter out there again.
Yeah, well, we have to have somebody watch it. But by the way, Talen Horton Tucker visited Illinois this weekend and has reduced his teams to three. He's got Xavier, Iowa State, and Illinois in the mix, so Illinois is still in the running there. And
When is he going to announce?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. A date's been set.
When is his press conference?
I don't know, but I'm sure he'll have one. Of course, he's from Simeon, and maybe they'll promise him that old jersey, that same jersey,
number 25
that so many former Simeon players have worn. And this guy is a good player. This is a guy the Illini really want. Now they've already got Ayo Dosunmu. So that's the main thing, but this is a wing player who can rebound and score. This is a good player.
Let's go to the phones for Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Jim and Lauren. I presume both of you have seen the good news in Sports Illustrated. I follow volleyball pretty closely, but I did not realize that we had a commit from Ellie Holtzman, and she's featured in the Faces in the Crowd and the Sports Illustrated, and her stats are just unreal. And so I'm hoping that you guys know about that. I had not heard that she or anyone else committed in the class of 18. And here it is. She commits to Illinois.
I don't know how I missed that. Do you have it in front of you?
Yep.
Well, what did it say about her?
Well, it says the 6'2 middle blocker at Mount Carmel Academy in New Orleans, had 38 kills, 22 digs, and 3 aces in a 5-set win over Archbishop Haven, I guess it is, Hagen. Last season, she set the Cubs record to a 41-11 season, and throughout the tournament, she had 677 kills, 549 digs, 322 blocks, and 19 aces. And then it says, LA has committed to Illinois.
No, I have not seen that, Dave. We've got a couple of, speaking of volleyball, we have a couple of big matches coming up. Got a Wednesday night and a Saturday, so.
This is the tough part of the season for us. I doubt if we get a victory over any of these three games. Nebraska kind of took care of us, but But these girls are really improving. If you went early in the season and see them now, they're better, and they're going to keep getting better. And I just hope the people in Champaign-Urbana would come out and support them, because they're really fun to watch, and they're enthusiastic, and they're great students. And so it's something we ought to be supporting.
Exactly right. Appreciate it, Dave. Thank you.
Yeah.
The Illini volleyball team won in 5 at Iowa, then went over to Nebraska and got beat in 4 there. They play at Minnesota on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. I checked Stanford to see how Kevin Hambley's doing, and his team won in 5 at Washington. Washington, a very good team as well. So Stanford still has just 2 losses, both of those to Penn State, one of them in Huff, and both those matches against Penn State were in the pre-conference schedule, and he hadn't lost any in the conference, so Kevin's doing very well there. Lauren, I thought there was a very nice feature on DeMonte Williams in Sunday's News Gazette. He's been sort of the forgotten guy with as he rehabbed his knee, but evidently he's all systems are go for him now.
Yeah, that's right. I think during the offseason there was some question whether they might have to redshirt him. There was talk of that, and they were actually the coaches discussed it, and that's all behind them now because he's playing hard, and I guess he started, at least he was announced to be a starter by publicly by Underwood before the game. I assume he started, and he isn't scoring a lot in practice, I don't think, but he's getting a lot of rebounds, and he's playing good defense, and he's playing the way Underwood wants to play. And I think what you're going to have is a lot of there's going to be a new approach toward defense, and that we haven't seen. You remember 2 years ago that Gross basically said don't go to the offensive board, just get back on defense because we can't get any offensive rebounds anyway. Well, this is the exact opposite approach that Underwood is taking. He's saying get to the board, go out, hit the boards hard and defend hard, and we'll worry about offense when we get the ball.
It's no wonder that LaRon Black is playing so well.
I think that's
right.
That's
what he can do.
That's right. And the thing about DeMonte, he gives you a good passing skills. And he will so remind you of Frank. I mean, his dad. He just looks like Frank. He plays a lot like Frank. Although Frank was a pure point guard, and DeMonte is a good passer, but he's not the point guard that Frank was. In those terms, he could still be a very good player. Obviously, Jim, you and I were in the, I think the last time they had a game in the State Farm Center with a high school game, and he played for Peoria that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, he was either a freshman or a sophomore. He might have been a freshman. How many turnovers do you think he had? I think the team had 40, and he had about a third of them.
Yeah, those games were really
and he was just a kid. But
kind of ragtag games.
Yeah.
But you're right. He was very young, and as I remember, very skinny.
Yeah, skinny and just erratic with the ball. He had a lot of flash, but he just made too many turnovers.
So the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores.
That's right. And he was, of course, he missed his senior year, you know, with that injury early last season, and sat out basically his entire senior season. And now he's back, and he's very athletic, Jim. He is really a good jumper, quick jumper, and a very good passer. I don't know how he's going to be as a scorer. That hasn't evolved yet, and I don't think he's going to be a great scorer. I think he's going to be a good contributor, though.
And the Illini golfers, we should mention, because they are in first place at the Tavistock Collegiate Invitational, and all 5 golfers shot a par or better yesterday. Adela Myers, 5-under 67, leading the way. The second round at Windermere, Florida today. I hope they're having better. I'm sure they're having better weather than we are.
You imagine what consistency they had yesterday. Hardy shoots even par and his score didn't count. And he's their best golfer as of earlier this season.
It rankles me that Illini hockey is never mentioned NCAA or not, it's hockey and they're good. I guess he's, I don't know if he means we should be talking about, well, he says Illini hockey, which of course is a club team, so I suppose that's the major region. We don't talk about them. They do have good teams year after year, it appears, and I've seen them play a couple of times. It's fun to go over there. It's not a very big place, and of course that's one of the things that is on the back burner, so to speak, as they talk about, you know, will that be the next sport? If so, what's the next female sport going to be?
Yeah, and wouldn't you like to be in on some of those meetings with the Josh Whitman and Peter Fox over there? They're talking about building something on campus. I mean, they'd like to do that, but the expenses would be tremendous. And, of course, there's also this downtown effort that would incorporate hockey. So I bet you sometime in the future, maybe the distant future, we'll see a varsity hockey team at Illinois.
Phone lines open. You can send us a text message as well as we take a break here. We're coming right back after this.
On the News Hour this afternoon, the News Gazette's Tom Kasich previews the week in Springfield, plus the latest local news, sports, and weather from ABC Heating and Air this afternoon at 4 on DWS.
Well, Tom Kasich is a good guest, but there won't be much to say about describing what's going on in Springfield or what will go on because not much happens there. The big happening tomorrow is the World Series. Tomorrow night in L.A., the Dodgers in Houston. Both teams have some terrific starting pitching. And again, probably, Lauren, the relief staffs will play an important role.
That's even they pull Kershaw after five or six innings now. I mean, mm-hmm. as good as he is, and boy, once they get into that bullpen, they're really tough. You imagine the other day Houston wins a game. Pitched two guys, one five innings and one four innings. That was the plan, and that's what they did. Didn't matter how – I mean, the guy's throwing a shutout. After five innings, they took him out anyway. And they took out Kershaw the last game anyway. I mean, I don't quite get it, but they think that those – obviously the relief pitchers are so good they can afford to do that.
Well, one thing that people are talking about now around here, particularly in Chicago, is – what happened to the firing of the pitching coach? Madden had given the coaches a vote of confidence last week, and the next day they announced that the Bothio is gone and that probably the new coach is going to be the former Rays pitching coach. He's going to interview for the job today, and people are wondering, is this a disagreement about something about the playoffs, of the pitching rotation, or whatever? Who knows? But
it was a kind of a strange pitching rotation, and the way that they used a couple of guys, Edwards for one and Lackey for another, don't you think? I mean,
yes.
I don't know. I'm
Is that the pitching coach's decision? Or?
Well, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think
either.
It was Joe Madden, but again, Joe's got the final say. I mean, he can. Maybe the pitching coach made a recommendation and he went along with it. Who knows?
Or the other way around. Maybe he said the pitching coach didn't go around. Maybe they got in a little tussle about something like that. But I know one thing. If you lead the world in walks,
oh man,
you're not you're not going to beat very many people.
You can't do that. The Cubs gave up way too many walks. Unbelievable.
They bring Edwards in, and I can guarantee you the first pitch he's going to throw is going to be high and outside. And he's going to throw one in the dirt. He's going to walk the first guy no matter what.
You see, I have that feeling about a lot of relief pitchers that you think, oh, boy, if they bring him in, I bet he walks the first guy. I have that feeling, but I don't have that feeling with the Yankees, and I don't have that feeling with the Dodgers. Their relief corps are really deep.
Let's break here and we got the 10:30 news coming up with Brian Barnhart, and after that we'll come back with more, taking more of your calls and your text messages here on our Monday morning quarterback. But then we're here with the news headlines is Brian Barnhart. And we're back on our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We're at 351-5667. That's our phone number. The text number is 351-5357. We're talking about the coaches getting fired and so forth. The Phoenix Suns start off 0-3.
And that's something.
And they fired their coach, Earl Watson. And Kyrie Irving off to a good start in Boston, fined $25,000 for cursing a fan in Philadelphia.
Is that the quickest you've ever heard of a coach being out after three games?
Well, I can't imagine.
Well, I got to tell you a story.
Uh-oh.
George Huff left the University of Illinois to coach the Boston Americans back in the day. I mean, it was around 1900 somewhere. He coached eight games and said he was miserable and wanted to go back to Illinois and quit. He was a manager of the team, and he left after. Ed, you know that. I heard that yesterday. That's right, at the walkthrough at the cemetery. But he was actually hired to be the coach, and he bowed out.
Yeah, well, this is three games.
That's three. That's five less.
0-3. And a text here about back to Illinois football. How do you start a quarter with too many men on the field?
That's a good question. We did.
Yeah, it's hard when you come out of a quarter. You either have something like that happen, or I saw somebody came back at the end of a quarter and got a time call. They couldn't get the playoff in time.
Well, let me tell you how bad that play was at the start of the second quarter. Illinois had just run for 6 yards to the 22-yard line, okay? They had second and four. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Quarter break, change ends, and go out with 12 players into the huddle, which is a 5-yard penalty, which threw it back to the 28. So they wound up getting a field goal out of that, Jim. But I'm sorry, they missed the field. They wound up hit. I think he might have hit the right upright, or was just to the right. Anyway, McLaughlin missed the field goal try. But if they hadn't had the penalty, there's a good chance they would have made a first down there and had a chance to score a touchdown.
It's, something like that might have happened in the first game where players are not quite accustomed to where they're supposed to be.
And that score was 7-7 at that time. Mm-hmm. So that would have made a big difference. 14-7 lead would change the way the game's played.
Well, the high schools are all set to play. In fact, the high school volleyball playoffs begin tonight, and then the high school football games on the weekend on Friday and Saturday.
Did you see how many games are being played on Saturday? And the high schools are complaining because, Illinois is going to be playing Penn State next year on a Friday night. That's been announced. And, of course, the High School Association doesn't like that. But the High School Association is the one that sets up these playoff games, and I'd say three-fourths of those games are on Saturday.
Did you hear about the controversy about where the South Florida game is going to be played next year?
It's supposed to be in Chicago.
Well, there were stories in yesterday's paper, I believe, in the Tribune, where because of some reason, I don't know if it's a renovation or what it was, that the game was going to be moved back to Champaign.
Well, that'll please Ed Bond.
That'll please a lot of people around here anyway, but I don't, there hadn't been anything official on that. Maybe it was just somebody heard that and wound up on the internet, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I find it hard that the field wouldn't be available because they're hosting, they host the Bear games. I mean, every other weekend, I would think that
they
must have cleared it a year or two ago.
You can replace the turf at the Soldier Field overnight, too. You know,
well, they do that
some
enough.
Of those kind of
How many times do you think they've changed that turf up there over the years?
Well, I don't know, dozens.
It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the News Gazette has the first round high school football games featuring the area teams listed in the paper today, and says time to kick off, and there is one 6A game that involves Danville. They're playing Thornton Fractional South. That's Friday, and then there's one game on in the 5A that Muhammad Seymour is in that, playing at Chatham and Glenwood. Most of the games are 1A, 2A, 3A involving teams in this area. And how would you like to be a team from Prairie Central? Your record is 5-4, yet you have qualified for the playoffs. You play Rochester in the first game.
Have you heard about the Rochester quarterback?
Yep.
I'm going to give you a number. He's thrown 42 touchdown passes with no interceptions. You want me to repeat that? 42
with no interceptions. Now, that might have been going into Friday's game. I don't know. But that's what I was given that information just this last week. And or might have been this weekend.
And, well, how good a coach is that guy?
Well, I mean,
he just won a state championship every year.
Yeah.
Time after time. He even beat his dad this year. He beat Springfield
Griffin?
Sacred Heart.
Yeah.
Sacred Heart Griffin.
Yeah.
And that was another one of those classic father-son matches over there. And this time, Rochester won.
Well, this guy's only about 5'10", the quarterback, so I don't know if Illinois is going to recruit him, but 42 touchdowns with no interceptions. You suppose that's accurate? Maybe I got misinformation, but I got that information. Whether it's accurate or not, I can't verify.
Here's something I can verify. If you have a problem with your vehicle, if you have a collision of any kind, Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair is the place to go. This is a full-service collision repair facility. They know that having a car accident is a very serious matter, and choosing the best collision repair specialist is also very serious. Two guys are passionate about what they do. They really care about it. That's one of the reasons they put their names on the business. Gallo Miller. This is their 13th year in business, and during that time they've repaired thousands and thousands of vehicles. Hands-on kind of guys, you go out there looking for them, they say, oh, they're back in the shop about every day. Not all owners of collision repair shops are like that, of course, but these guys like to go back and supervise and get their hands a little dirty. They hands-on owners, that is for sure. They know the collision repair business inside and out. In fact, Dave spent a number of years as an insurance adjuster before returning to his first love, which is fixing cars. And before that, before Gallo Miller, Bill successfully ran body shops at other businesses in the area. They know that it's a hassle having your car repaired. Collision repair shop is the last place you want to do, but they're there to help you through the process, making it as painless in your daily life as it possibly can be. Free estimates, always. Easy to find them. They have a very attractive building. It's on the south side of I-74 between the Neal Street and Prospect exits. For more information, visit their website at www.gallomiller.com. It is 10:45. We take a quick break here, Mr. Bond. We're coming right back. We're back on our Monday morning quarterback session at 351-5669. That's the phone number. Text line is 351-5357. Lauren was talking about a couple of interesting stats there during that break.
Freshmen for Illinois in football, Epstein and Bonner and Smalling basically, have scored the last 9 touchdowns that Illinois has scored this season, going back to one that Crouch made early in, you know, who is a junior, Crouch made in a game earlier before he was moved from quarterback. So Smalling, Epstein, and Bonner, 9 touchdowns in a row. And the other stat that I found interesting is that the two safeties, Green and Williams, Green's a hitter, and Williams looks pretty good as a freshman, by the way, and they had 27 tackles in that game, 14 by Williams, 13 by Green, and you say Jones had Julian Jones had 9.
9, yeah. Uh-huh.
So we need to get those linemen making tackles.
Yeah,
up there.
The linemen
instead of making them in the secondary.
Let's see here a couple of text messages have come in. Oh, here, this is pretty interesting. There's only one coach fired faster than Earl Watson was yesterday.
Okay, who's that?
Dolph Schayes was fired after one game in the 1971 season with the Buffalo Braves.
Is that right?
One game. Wonder what he did.
Well, he didn't want to coach, probably. He probably had misgivings from the beginning. But I remember Dolph Schayes being about a 6'8", 6'9" forward that was really good in the NBA as a player.
Here's a pretty interesting text from Bill. He said when players get to the pros, they probably don't need a cheerleading coach or need to practice tackling. Maybe college players do. He's speaking of Lovey, I'm sure, who has been the same, has the same demeanor on the sideline now as he did when he took the Bears to the Rose Bowl. And Bill also says, I have an easy solution to Illinois' football problem. Orange turf. I don't know about you, but when I try to watch a Boise State game, I get sick of that turf in a hurry.
And the interesting thing is the turf is the same color as their jerseys, which gives them an advantage, I would think. I don't know what the advantage is, but there must be some advantage or they wouldn't do it.
Couldn't find that guy. He was lost in the turf. Well, let's see. I believe that's all the text messages that we have just we got a lot of them today. 19, maybe people can remember the text line and not remember our phone number. I keep repeating it, 351-5667. I believe we need to take one final break here, Mr. Bond, at 10:52. Then we come back. We'll have about 5 minutes to wrap it up. Maybe you have a question or a comment. Let us know. We'll take our final break right here. We're back doing our Monday morning quarterbacking. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. And this email from Robert. While fans may be disappointed in the record of the football team, the unquestioned worst athletic program in Illinois is the women's swimming and diving program. For virtually the entire tenure of the present coach, the team has finished last or next to last in the conference swim meet, which is the only real measurement of the competitive nature of swimming. AD Josh Whitman's we will win motto clearly doesn't apply to does not apply to this program because we tolerate such a losing program. Based on Illinois coaching presence at the bottom of the conference and the results, it clearly shows that the athletic administration just doesn't care about swimming.
Well, they certainly proved they didn't care about swimming with the men when they dropped the sport.
Well, that's right, they did. But he's quite right that that program is not shown it's going to go anywhere, and they're in last place or next to it most of the time. Maybe it's just a question of time. He's got a lot of priorities.
Yes, he does, and he's got some big ones.
The Dallas Cowboys owner and general manager Jerry Jones' concerns about the protests during the national anthem are not just about what is good for his team, but what's good for the NFL. He says there is no question the league is suffering negative effects from these protests. 2 weeks ago, Jones said if any of the players disrespect the flag during the national anthem, that they would be benched. At a league meeting in New York, owners and players had open dialogue about the protest, but no change was made. Cowboys have not had a player protest during the national anthem on Sunday. They had a defensive end, David Irving, who briefly raised his fist at the end of the anthem. So we haven't heard much of conversation about that lately.
No, I think the best thing to do is just go forward and let the guys do what they're going to do. You can't stop them. You can, but I mean, it would be foolish to try to stop them because all of a sudden you might have some kind of a breakdown where you wouldn't even have a game if a bunch of players were benched because they, I think that the players would support other players.
And a question here, Ed, does talk at WDWS.com still work? It does, doesn't it? Nothing has happened there. And Jim Turpin, would you ask Lauren Tate, as only you can, why a young fellow like him would want to retire?
Well, I don't know. I think when you see everybody else around you retiring, I think it's, you figure it's time, right?
I don't know. You've been able to go on cemetery walks and all those kind
of
things.
Yeah, like I say, I was over there over visiting my own grave, so what the heck, I might as well see the other stuff.
Well, you're on the radio more than most people.
Well, more than some, not as much as some, but not as much as you.
Well, I don't know about that. But anyway, he's just kind of fooling around. Thanks for all the text messages today. With our fancy computer here, we count them, 22. 22 today, and we appreciate all the phone comments and the questions as well. And we'll be back again next Monday morning, and we'll be talking about Illinois' homecoming game.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. Wisconsin coming in. It's an 11 o'clock game.
Very good game, and watch them run that football.
They will do that. And as I said, they're a lot better defensively than anybody knows. Check it sometime. Boy, it's amazing how they hold teams down.
On DWS in Champaign-Urbana.